Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I'm enjoying a cup of green tea. Delicious. Today we're talking about Book 7, Chapter 2 of The Brothers Karamazov. Questions that I asked you guys. What is Rakitin up to? He's planning something dodgy and he guesses what it is. I'm not rebelling against my God. I simply don't accept his world. Alyosha suddenly smiled, a forced smile. Disgust. Tekrivik said, what is Rakitin up to? Rakitin will do what the Rakitins of the world usually do. Sow dissent. Manipulate. Make intrigues and corrupt others to satisfy an unquenchable thirst of his huge ego. Jeez. That's quite an accusation. If all that is the case, then he is quite a character. Quite a nasty character. And that quote from Alyosha, I am not rebelling against my God, I simply don't accept his world. He mentioned it himself, says Tekrivik. It's a lack of supreme justice that Alyosha is desperately seeking and not finding in God's world. Seeing his mentor's body decaying this rapidly is an affront to his sense of justice and decency. God is behaving indecently. And his injustice towards the saintly Zosimus remains is a sign of God's disreputable character. It's an insult to the memory of his servant, Zosima. Taking inspiration from Uncle Drosselmeyer's wonderful quote yesterday, here's a quote from the Spanish existentialist Unamuno. Those who believe, they believe in God, but without passion in the heart, without uncertainty, without doubt, and even at times without despair, believe only in the idea of God and not in God himself. Swim said the mama fishy said, I totally agree with this Unamuno quote and also with Rakitin himself. The question I now have for myself, though, is am I an existentialist Christian or a Christian existentialist? Golly. Uncle Drosselmeyer said, I must have justice or I will destroy myself, and not justice in some remote infinite time and space, but here on earth, and that I could see myself. A little quote from this book. Without doubt, there are some points of coincidence between Alyosha and Ivan, the same kind of suffering and rebellion. They both believe in God and how they could find him without compass. Alyosha cannot endure the weight of being left on his own in this indecipherable world. In his bewilderment, he seems to be ready to commit moral suicide by letting Rakitin guide him. Note aside, we rebel to God because we think the world should be better than it is. Because we were taught to believe in a kind of providence or divine justice controlling the universe and setting things right for us. Buddhists and Stoics solved this dilemma by accepting and living according to the natural, chaotic way of things. That's kind of depressing. I remember being a kid and thinking, believing in some kind of karma, I suppose. I probably wouldn't have called it karma, but something like that, like some balance to the universe. Some, good will prevail kind of sentiment. But, I don't know. Now it just kind of seems, like chaos. Take while the taking's good. Let me count these pages. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah, I'm not reading 16 pages today. We're going to do half of chapter 3, which is called An Onion. Try to find a good place to stop it about halfway through. Grushenka lived in the busiest part of the town, near the cathedral square, in a small wooden lodge, in the courtyard belonging to the house of the widow Morozov. The house was a large stone building of two stories, old and very ugly. The widow led a secluded life with her two unmarried nieces, who were also elderly women. She had no need to let her lodge, But everyone knew that she had taken in Grushenka as a lodger 4 years before, solely to please her kinsman, the servant Samsonov, who was known to the girl's protector. It was said that the jealous old man's object in placing his favourite with the widow Morozov was that the old woman should keep a sharp eye on her new lodger's conduct, but this sharp eye soon proved to be unnecessary, and in the end, the widow Morozov seldom met Grushenka and did not worry her by looking after her in any way. It is true that 4 years had passed since the old man had brought the slim, delicate, shy, timid, dreamy, and sad girl of 18 from the chief town of the province, and much had happened since then. Little was known of the girl's history in the town, and that little was vague. Nothing more had been learnt during the last 4 years, even after many persons had become interested in the beautiful young woman into whom Agrafena Alexandrovna had meanwhile developed. There were rumours that she had been at 17 betrayed by someone, some sort of officer, and immediately afterwards abandoned by him. The officer had gone away and afterwards married, while Grushenka had been left in poverty and disgrace. It was said, however, that though Grushenka had been raised from destitution by the old man, Samsonov, she came of a respectable family belonging to the clerical class, that she was the daughter of a deacon or something of the sort. And now, after 4 years of the sensitive, injured, and pathetic little orphan had become a plump, rosy beauty of the Russian type, a woman of bold and determined character, proud and insolent. She had a good head for business, was acquisitive, saving, and careful, and by fair means or foul had succeeded, it was said, in amassing a little fortune. There was only one point on which all were agreed. Grushenka was not easily to be approached, and, except her aged protector, there had not been one man who could boast of her favours during those 4 years. It was a positive fact, for there had been a good many, especially during the last 2 years, who had attempted to obtain those favours. But all their efforts had been in vain, and some of these suitors had been forced to beat an undignified and even comic retreat, owing to the firm and ironical resistance they met from the strong-willed young person. It was known, too, that the young person had especially of late been given to what is called speculation, and that she had shown marked abilities in that direction, so that many people began to say that she was no better than a Jew. It was not that she lent money on interest, but it was known, for instance, that she had for some time past, in partnership with old Karamazov, actually invested in the purchase of bad debts for a trifle, a tenth of their nominal value, and afterwards had made out of them 10 times their value. The old widower, Samsonov, a man of large fortune, was stingy and merciless. He tyrannized over his grown-up sons, but for the last year, during which he had been ill and lost the use of his swollen legs, he had fallen greatly under the influence of his protégé, whom he had at first kept strictly and in humble surroundings on Lenten fare, as the wits said at the time. But Grushenka had succeeded in emancipating herself, while she established in him a boundless belief in her fidelity. The old man, now long since dead, had had a large business in his day and was also a noteworthy character, miserly and hard as flint. Though Grushenka's hold upon him was so strong that he could not live without her, it had been so, especially for the last 2 years, he did not settle any considerable fortune on her, and would not have been moved to do so, if she had threatened to leave him. But he had presented her with a small sum, and even that was a surprise to everyone when it became known. "You are a wench with brains," he said to her, when he gave her 8,000 rubles, "and you must look after yourself, but let me tell you that, except your yearly allowance as before, you will get nothing more from me to the day of my death, and I'll leave you nothing in my will either." And he kept his word. He died and left everything to his sons, whom, with their wives and children, he had treated all his life as servants. Grushenka was not even mentioned in his will. All this became known afterwards. He helped Grushenka with his advice to increase her capital and put business in her way. When Fyodor Pavlovich, who first came into contact with Grushenka over a piece of speculation, ended, to his own surprise, by falling madly in love with her, old Samsonov, gravely ill as he was immensely amused. It is remarkable that throughout their whole acquaintance, Grushenka was absolutely and spontaneously open with the old man, and he seems to have been the only person in the world with whom she was so. Of late, when Dmitri too had come on the scene with his love, the old man left off laughing. Excuse me. On the contrary, he once gave Grushenka a stern and earnest piece of advice. If you have to choose between the two, father or son, you'd better choose the old man, if only you make sure the old scoundrel will marry you and settle some fortune on you beforehand. But don't keep on with the captain, you'll get no good out of that. These were the very words of the old profligate, who felt already that his death was not far off and who actually died 5 months later. I will note, too, in passing, that although many of in our town knew of the grotesque and monstrous rivalry of the Karamazovs' father and son, the object of which was Grushenka, scarcely anyone understood that what really underlay her attitude to both of them. Even Grushenka's two servants, after the catastrophe of which we will speak later, testified in court that she received Dmitri Fyodorovitch simply from fear because he threatened to murder her. These servants were an old cook, invalidish and almost deaf, who came from Grushenka's old home, and her granddaughter, a smart young girl of 20 who performed the duties of a maid. Grushenka lived very economically, and her surroundings were anything but luxurious. Her lodge consisted of 3 rooms furnished with mahogany furniture, in the fashion of 1820, belonging to her landlady. It was quite dark when Rakitin and Alyosha entered her rooms, yet they were not lighted up. Grushenka was lying down in her drawing room on the big, hard, clumsy sofa with mahogany back. The sofa was covered with shabby and ragged leather. Under her head she had 2 white down pillows taken from her bed. She was lying, stretched out motionless on her back with her hands behind her head. She was dressed as though expecting someone in a black silk dress, with a dainty lace fichu on her head, which was very becoming. Over her shoulders was thrown a lace shawl, pinned with a massive gold brooch. She certainly was expecting someone. She lay as though impatient and weary, her face rather pale and her lips and eyes hot, restlessly tapping the arm of the sofa with the tip of her right foot. The appearance of Rakitin and Alyosha caused a slight excitement. From the hall they could hear Grushenka leap up from the sofa and cry out in a frightened voice, "Who's there?" But the maid met the visitors and at once called back to her mistress. "It's not he, it's nothing, only other visitors." "What can be the matter?" muttered Rakitin, leading Alyosha into the drawing room. Grushenka was standing by the sofa, as though still alarmed. A thick coil of her dark brown hair escaped from its lace covering and fell on her right shoulder, but she did not notice it and did not put it back till she had gazed at her visitors and recognized them. "Ah, it's you, Rakitin. You quite frightened me. Whom have you brought? Who is this with you? Good heavens, you have brought him," she exclaimed, recognizing Alyosha. "Do send for candles," said Rakitin, with a free and easy air of most intimate friend, who is privileged to give orders in the house. "Candles, of course, candles. Fenya, fetch him a candle. Well, you have chosen a moment to bring him," she exclaimed again, nodding towards Alyosha and turning to the looking-glass, and she began quickly fastening up her hair with both hands. She seemed displeased. "Haven't I managed to please you?" asked Rakitin, instantly almost offended. "You frighten me, Rakitin, that's what it is," Grushenka turned with a smile to Alyosha. "Don't be afraid of me, my dear Alyosha, you cannot think how glad I am to see you, my unexpected visitor, but you frightened me, Rakitin. I thought it was Mitya breaking in. You see, I deceived him just now. I made him promise to believe me, and I told him a lie. I told him that I was going to spend the evening with my old man, Kuzma Kuzmich, and should be there till late counting up his money. I always spend one whole evening a week with him making up his accounts. We lock ourselves in, and he counts on the reckoning beads, while I sit and put things down in my book. I am the only person he trusts. Mitya believes that I am there, but I came back and have been sitting locked in here expecting some news. How was it Fenya let you in? Fenya, Fenya, run out to the gate, open it and look about whether the captain is to be seen. Perhaps he is hiding and spying. I am dreadfully frightened." There's no one there, Agrafena Alexandrovna. I've just looked out. I keep running to peep through the crack. I am in fear and trembling myself. Are the shutters fastened, Fenya? And we must draw the curtains. That's better. She drew the heavy curtains herself. He'd rush in at once if he saw a light. I'm afraid of your brother Mitya today, Alyosha. Grushenka spoke aloud, and though she was alarmed, she seemed very happy about something. Why are you so afraid of Mitya today? Inquired Rakitin. I should have thought you were not timid with him. You'd twist him round your little finger. I tell you, I am expecting news, priceless news, so I don't want Mitya at all. And he didn't believe, I feel he didn't, that I should stay at Kuzma Kuzmich's. He must be in his ambush now, behind Fyodor Pavlovich's, in the garden, watching for me. And if he's there, he won't come. So much the better. But I really have been to see Kuzma Kuzmich's. Mitch's escorted me there. I told him I should stay there till midnight, and I asked him to be sure to come at midnight to fetch me home. He went away, and I sat 10 minutes with Kuzma Kuzmich and came back here again. Ugh, I was afraid. I ran for fear of meeting him. And why are you so dressed up? What a curious cap you've got on. How curious you are yourself, Rakitin. I tell you, I am expecting a message. If it comes, if the message comes, I shall fly. I shall gallop away, and you will see no more of me. That's why I'm dressed up, so as to be ready. And where are you flying to? If you know too much, you'll get old too soon. Upon my word, you are highly delighted. I've never seen you like this before. You are dressed up as if you were going to a ball. Rakitin looked her up and down. Much you know about balls. And do you know much about them? I have seen a ball the year before last. Kuzma Kuzmich's son was married, and I looked on from the gallery. Do you suppose I want to be talking to you, Rakitin, while a prince like this is standing here, such a visitor? Alyosha, my dear boy, I gaze at you and can't believe my eyes. Good heavens, can you have come here to see me? To tell you the truth, I have never thought of seeing you, and I didn't think you would ever come see me. Though this is not the moment now, I am awfully glad to see you. Sit down on the sofa here. That's right, my bright young moon. I really can't take it even now. Eh, Rakitin, if only you had brought him yesterday or the day before. But I am glad as it is. Perhaps it's better he has come now at such a moment and not the day before yesterday. She gaily sat down beside Alyosha on the sofa, looking at him with positive delight. And she really was glad. She was not lying when she said so. Her eyes glowed, her lips laughed, but it was a good-hearted, merry laugh. Alyosha had not expected to see such a kind expression in her face. He had hardly met her till the day before. He had formed an alarming idea of her, and had been horribly distressed the day before by the spiteful and treacherous trick she had played on Katerina Ivanovna. He was greatly surprised to find her now altogether different from what he had expected, and crushed as he was by his own sorrow, his eyes involuntarily rested on her with attention. Her whole manner seemed changed for the better since yesterday. There was scarcely any trace of that mawkish sweetness in her speech, of that voluptuous softness in her movements. Everything was simple and good-natured. Her gestures were rapid, direct, confiding, but she was greatly excited. All right, that's where we're going to stop for today, midway through this chapter. Thank you very much for listening. Head over to the subreddit and have a little chit-chat, and I'll see you tomorrow.